Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we hear from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're returning to the United States and taking the temperature in the race for the White House. With another big week of primaries behind us, we'll gauge the current status of the polls, and we'll attempt to make sense of what the latest developments mean for both the Democrats and the GOP. As always, we'll consider the possible economic impact of different potential outcomes, and we'll ask what the markets are making and might make in future of the current runners and riders. We start with an assessment of the latest polls. Brian Nick is head of tactical asset allocation for UBS Wealth Management Americas. How do he and his colleagues look at the current polling, make sense of it, and use that to inform their strategy?
Well, it's something that constantly has to be in the background of our thinking. I think the hope is that it doesn't move into the foreground and become a huge impact and something else that we have to juggle along with figuring out what's happening with the economic outlook, what's happening with monetary policy, not to mention corporate earnings, things that tend to drive the asset classes that we cover and that we advise clients on. Typically, what you see is that close elections do not necessarily lead to market impacts. It's when there's a sense that there could be a sweeping result where there's one party or one candidate that's not only going to win, but win convincingly and basically take much of the government with them. If you have a political party that is aligned in terms of their control of not just the White House, but two houses of Congress, that could have a much larger policy impact. It's much easier for that kind of unified government to get their agenda through, and that could represent a sweeping change from the status quo.
We caught up next with Mark Haefeli, UBS Global Chief Investment Officer, to get his take after another significant Tuesday of primaries.
It's been a very interesting race. Clients globally are starting to really pay attention to what's going on in the U.S. election. I think that in terms of our investing, one of the things to remember is that Hillary Clinton remains the favorite if you look in betting markets, which are a good way to price these things, by far the favorite. And that's in part because while Trump has come kind of from nowhere to be the leader on the Republican side, he's never gotten more than 50% of the vote in the Republican primaries. And the challenge for him would be to go from a candidate that's liked from a minority of Republican voters to a more mainstream candidate, and I think there's a very long way for him to go still. So the market impact hasn't really been factored in yet, although given the stability of Clinton as a front runner, there hasn't been much change there.
Sasha Eisenberg is Monocle's Washington correspondent and is on the campaign trail in the US. We caught up with him after this past week's mini Super Tuesday. We're constantly watching out for decisive moments in the race. Was this past Tuesday one such?
I think we know for certain now that Bernie Sanders does not have a path to, a plausible path at least, to win the Democratic nomination against Hillary Clinton. She won 5 states. 2 of them were close, but she gained a significant delegate advantage, and he's now at a point lagging behind her by about 300 delegates. It is basically impossible to make up. He has the money. He has the time. He can fight this out for another 2.5 months and possibly come away having sort of spread his message and influence the party, but it's very unlikely that he'll be the Democratic nominee.
John Savakul heads up the U.S. Office of Public Policy in Washington, D.C., which lobbies on issues of importance for UBS and works with clients to assist them on how issues on Capitol Hill could impact them. How would John characterize the current standings?
I think it's clear that Hillary Clinton will be the Democratic nominee going forward. She'll have some competition from Bernie Sanders for the remaining contest, and he will remain in the race, but I don't see any pathway for him getting the nomination, and I think she will comfortably win. On the Republican side, Donald Trump will probably not get a majority of delegates to win the competition outright. He will be the leader in delegates, and I think this summer you'll see the Republican Party likely nominate him at the convention. He's a very controversial pick, but the reality is that he has won the most delegates. He has done it in a fair and square way, and it would be very hard for the party to deny him the nomination when they decide in July. So, I see this clearly shaping up as a Trump-Clinton contest in the summer and fall.
James Boies is a political historian and author, most recently of Hillary Rising. Where does James think that we are now in terms of the polling? Does he think we've had a decisive moment this week?
What was interesting about this week's elections was that we've reached the halfway point, which isn't really being focused upon, I don't really think, enough. March 15 was going to signify the point by which half the states had voted, and therefore half the delegates had been awarded, which obviously remains 50% left to vote and other half of the states to vote. But what that gives is a good indication about where we are in terms of the delegate allocation, who has won how many states, and where we are within the pecking order. And that, of course, has led to a huge cull of the field, particularly on the Republican side of things, where, of course, we entered with some 17 candidates, and now we're down to 3. We've got John Kasich, we've got Donald Trump, and Senator Cruz. So the fact that that cull has affected is significant, because that's going to alter the pattern and the flavour of the race moving forward, particularly on the Republican side of things. With regard to the Democrats, it's always a little bit more difficult to say where we're going, because of course they're maintaining their proportional representation vote allocation moving forward, which the Republicans are not. So what that means is that Hillary Clinton is in the exact opposite position that she was 8 years ago. 8 years ago, she was sticking in the race, but behind Barack Obama, a significant amount, enough that even if she kept doing as well as she was doing, she was never going to catch up with Obama. And Sanders is in the same position now. He can keep doing okay and probably coming in first in some states, second in others, as long as you're going to get some degree of parity there. The allocation of delegates is going to be such that Hillary's going to win this, and all that Sanders can do now is basically drag out the inevitable.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the wider economic impact of potential different outcomes and try to explain why there seem to be some alternative narratives around this year's campaign that might set it apart from others in recent history. We consider the wider economic impact of the race next. How to calculate the economic impact of different outcomes. Here's Brian Nick again.
You can look at the individual policies the candidates are espousing. So, for example, you have some candidates on the Republican side, namely Donald Trump, who's currently the front runner, talking about things like trade policy, the potential introduction of tariffs, where he thinks that we aren't being treated fairly by some of our trade partners. That could certainly have a measurable economic impact. Any kind of economist, you know, Economist 101 textbook will tell you that, you know, erecting tariffs has an impact not only on the companies who are importing into the United States, but consumers in the United States as well. You know, right now the consumer in the U.S. is relatively healthy, but by no means is consumption growing robustly. We're talking about 2%, perhaps 2.5%. That's just kind of keeping growth above water in the 1 to 1.5 to 2% range. So anything that would threaten to sort of jeopardize that fragility there could be seen as having an economic impact. I think on the Democratic side, if you have Democrats promising to, say, raise taxes on the wealthy or on particular types of investment decisions, that could impact how some of these markets work, how some investments are structured, organized. If you're going to take away some of the tax advantages that go into the investing world, that could potentially, you know, shift the landscape, certainly for us here at UBS, in terms of how we are advising clients.
We asked Sasha Eisenberg to assess the potential economic impact for the GOP and Democrats, respectively. Sasha's quick to highlight the importance of political uncertainty in shaping the economic landscape.
We are guaranteed tons of uncertainty in the Republican field, at least for the next 4 months, which tends to be something that markets don't care for. Generally, there's been a frame of thinking that markets generally are sort of happy with Republican governments in power, because you tend to see a relaxing of regulations, you tend to see cuts in taxes, and generally pro-trade, pro-development policies. Trump, as the, you know, likeliest Republican nominee at this point, deviates rather significantly from that kind of economic consensus. He's largely against trade. He's against legalizing immigrants who are already here. He has called for increased taxes on hedge funds and other investors. He doesn't seem eager to reform Social Security and some of the other sort of social welfare style entitlements that are a source of a lot of the country's debt. And so we could end up in a situation where the markets, the corporate world, find themselves rooting unusually for the Democratic nominee in the fall, as it looks like Trump would be their choice. But that's, my guess is that the uncertainty will cause more panic in the markets right now than the expectation that we know what type of government we'll get in January.
What does Mark Haefeli make of the likely economic impact of what's happened this week? Will it chiefly be defined by individuals' policy as we go forward? Is it, as so often, likely to be driven by differing approaches to tax?
You mentioned the taxes, and I think that's a great place to start. Presidents will promise a large number of things in their campaigns, but all tax bills have to originate in the House of Representatives in the United States. And that is part and parcel of the larger theme of American politics, which is that the two-party system and the tripartite government have a real limiting power on what anyone can achieve. And so, unlike a parliamentary system, it is very slow to get policy changes in the United States. And that's why it's hard for markets to move on elections alone. Where I think we would see the most impact, and there is a possibility, is if the Congress goes Democrat as well as the White House. That would give more scope for the Democrats to enact a slate of agendas that could have a meaningful impact on the economic trajectory of the United States.
So looking ahead to a probable Trump versus Hillary Clinton contest, what could that mean in economic terms, or is it still a little too early to assess that? Here's James Boyes.
Ultimately, you're going to see both candidates putting forward their ideas. The extent to which a manifesto in the UK terms will emerge will be debatable, quite frankly. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party will try to foist upon the two candidates, you know, the policies that emerge out of the debates which have come along on the campaign, and particularly what happens at the convention. So you often get sort of losing contestants being given floor time, almost certainly as a sop and a concession to get out of the race, you know, throw that race behind one of the two leading candidates. And that will have some potential implications. But in terms of specifics, I mean, historically, American presidential elections have been light on specifics generally. And I really don't imagine any great specifics coming out of Donald Trump, quite frankly, because so far there have been none.
As so often discussed on this programme before, there's frequently a challenge to price in the sort of political volatility and uncertainty that we've been hearing about so far. And given that the unpredictable campaign stateside has at times threatened to expose other fissures, be they social, political, diplomatic even, how much of a challenge does it remain to account for this and continue to think strategically and effectively? Brian Nick takes up the story.
It's extremely difficult because, it's, as we say sometimes, not only are there things that we know we don't know, there are probably things we don't know that we don't know about what will happen. You know, depending on how the next few weeks shake out, it looks actually rather likely now that the Republican nomination will be uncertain heading all the way to the convention in July, which is something that's not happened in my lifetime. And most people covering the races and analyzing the races will not have seen anything like that and won't really know how this is going to shake out. There could be multiple ballots, multiple rounds where delegates have to vote and change and they'll be jockeying. And really, this is only the type of thing we tend to see in movies and television shows. I think the biggest challenge for us, again, because we don't see at the end of this a truly sweeping change, so let's say Hillary Clinton becomes the president, it's still likely that the Republicans will control the House and will have some measure of divided government to kind of moderate the impulses on both sides of the political aisle. That's probably an okay outcome for markets. What I would say is that the challenge that we have primarily is keeping our clients confident and calm through this type of volatility. Most of the things that impact our clients' portfolios are going to be having to do with the state of the economy, the global economy. They're going to have something to do with how corporations are able to grow earnings this year, monetary policy, fiscal policy. So the election in the U.S. right now is relatively far down the list in terms of things that could potentially have a major impact on markets. That's not to say that it won't, but there's other things we have to look at as well. So it's less about gauging that market impact, and it's more about contextualizing the election in the minds of investors.
There are a number of oft-repeated mantras about elections and the political cycle. One such, advanced by Bill Clinton back in 1992, is that, to paraphrase slightly, it always comes down to the economy in the end. It has seemed, though, that there's a very different narrative this time around. Does Mark Haefeli agree?
This election is different, and it's different because millennials are outnumbering baby boomers. We have a billionaire Donald Trump who, in Ohio, for example, is the guy who is winning with people who make less than $50,000 a year, whereas Kasich did better with people who make more than $100,000 a year. So it is a strange dynamic. You know, you talk about a phrase that maybe sums it up at this point. I don't think there's anything better than what Donald Trump said last night in perhaps a rare moment of candor. He said, quote, "I don't understand it," unquote. Nobody understands it, talking about his success.
Wise words and observations, as ever, from Mark Haefeli. What does James Boyes make, though, of this notion that this time it's different?
Who knows what's going to happen between now and Election Day? So the famous Macmillan line, it's events, dear boy, events, could very well crop up. But so far, what we're seeing an awful lot of focus upon is immigration and a sense of unease with the economy at large. So Donald Trump is going to keep banging on about immigration, no doubt. As long as the economy keeps ticking along as well as it does, which is, you know, pretty good in terms of historical precedent by the United States standard, Hillary Clinton's going to keep talking about how well the economy's going. Don't forget, it was her husband's campaign in 1992 who coined the expression, "It's the economy, stupid." So, you know, she's going to be able to talk back to political antecedents in terms of a track record of bringing back sort of Clinton-era economics, as far as that goes, in a good sense. Whereas I think Trump's going to be banging the drum about immigration and building walls.
Finally, we asked Monocle's man on the campaign trail to add his insight. Does Sasha Eisenberg agree that, as ever, it's all about the economy, stupid? Or are we, in fact, dealing with a very different time?
We have unemployment under 5%. In this country, we have significant housing market growth. All the indications are such that people actually should be relatively content with the state of the economy, and yet Trump's success and Bernie Sanders' success come from an economic anxiety that certainly in Trump's case becomes channeled into a sort of broader social cultural anxiety about change within the United States and the United States' place in the world. And so we need to understand probably that in a post-industrial economy, just looking at the unemployment rate and using that as a read on whether people are kind of content with the state of affairs is too simplistic.
And that's Sasha Eisenberg, bringing us to the end of this 76th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Tune in next time for a very special edition of the programme from the San Francisco leg of the Annie Leibovitz Women New Portraits exhibition. Listen again, meanwhile, and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via the usual channels. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.